You're listening to the Electric Sheep magazine podcast. I'm Alex Fitch, and in this episode, you'll hear a couple of interviews I conducted with directors who made their first films on very low budgets and dealt with subjects of hauntings that are to do as much with memory as anything supernatural. Later in the show, I'm discussing with Eduardo Sanchez his debut film The Blair Witch Project, as well as his latest movie Lovely Molly, which opened in cinemas on the 29th of June. Before that, in an interview recorded live on stage at this year's Sci-Fi London, the London Science Fiction and Fantastic Film Festival, I'm talking to director Sean Holmes about his micro-budget feature Memory Lane, which sees an Iraq veteran cheating death repeatedly to revisit his memories of a dead girlfriend and solve the riddle of her death.
It's a film that deals with a lot of issues, with loss, with persistence of memory, whether we trust the things that we do remember.
Yeah.
Thinking about the scene set in Iraq or whatever conflict the flashback's meant to be, it seems that post-traumatic stress disorder was also something you wanted to deal with on the farm.
Yeah. Michael, the guy who plays Nick, he's actually my best friend. Mm-hmm. And the year before we made Memory Lane, he actually spent a year in Afghanistan. So I wanted to give him something that he could really put his whole self into, I guess. Mm. So that's where this post-traumatic stress thing came from. Just wanted something for him to be able to draw his experience from, just to be as truthful as possible.
Sure. And did he kind of talk about some of the experiences of his fellow soldiers, perhaps some of the guilt that they brought back?
Absolutely. The speech that he gave, the I Just Lost Track of Time speech, he didn't write it, but we let him tell us a story, and we sort of recorded it, and Hari and I wrote it with a kid named Hari Sathbin. We sort of listened to what he was explaining about an actual experience that he had, and just translated it for what we needed.
Yeah. And that's a film that obviously you shot around your local neighborhood.
Yes.
You used locations, you knew presumably a whole network of friends in terms mm-hmm. of building sets and casting and whatnot.
Yeah.
Making a film that intimately, I guess it also puts a lot of stress on friendships and family relationships, but at the same time, I guess, you know, you will have a film that you're very proud of mm-hmm. at the end of.
Definitely. Our budget was, I guess, around $300.
Wow.
I basically only fed people. That's all that I spent money on. Things like what you were saying about like stressing your relationships. There was a time where the garage that they use is my grandmother's garage, and the light bulbs were the light bulbs from her house. And she came home one day and none of the lights worked because I'm out in the garage. So she threatened to call the police several times. Just because we did things like that, she'd just come home and not have food or light bulbs.
Did you not tell her about the light bulbs?
No. We're breaking a movie. It's like, go, go, go.
Light bulb themes again.
Yeah. But yeah, definitely can understand that. The bathroom that they use to shock, that's at the beginning and the end of the movie, that's my mom's bathroom, and we flooded it. When there's a shot where the ring is on the ground, mm-hmm. and I just took a 5-gallon bucket of water and dumped it all over the floor, and it cracked through her ceiling in her kitchen. It was raining. Things like that happen.
Sure. And in terms of your filmmaking experience, I mean, was it as much that as you were making the film, you were discovering techniques that worked and techniques that didn't work?
Absolutely. I don't know. I went to film school for 2.5 years. Mm. I went to Loyola Marymount University in Los Angeles. Went for about 2.5 years, and just, I guess, halfway through, I decided that if I wanted to write, direct, and produce movies, that I really just needed to go write, direct, and produce movies. I didn't get to take any editing classes, cinematography classes, no sound classes. All of that, you're seeing me sort of stumble through it for the first time in Memory Lane and sort of find my technique, I guess, and how all of that works.
Yeah. And things like knowing how to strap the camera to the car without destroying it.
Yeah.
Which you obviously did figure out.
Yeah, no, suction cups.
Oh, nice. And there are nice little visual effects, like when the image turns monochrome briefly,
yes.
suggesting maybe he's having kind of brain frizz and things like that. were those things that you did in post-production thinking, I'm just going to try it and see how it looks?
No, I thought of that before we even shot it. It's probably been like 6 years, but I used to have bad panic attacks, like just heart would race. It's exactly what he's going through. We're like, let's just do what I was doing. But like, you just get this like sudden rush, like, oh my God, everything's wrong. And like the world's gonna cave in. Like it's just like this brief little flash. So I tried to demonstrate that with the monochrome, just to kind of make you, just kind of snap you out of reality for a second. That's where that would have come from.
And then when you have the flashback scenes to Afghanistan, they're lit quite differently to evoke that, I guess, Middle Eastern light. Uh-huh. And it's very convincing. I mean, I guess those again were something you shot down the road. But I thought it was very impressive the way that you brought Afghanistan to life, and hopefully, I guess...
That was probably the last thing we shot, so we kind of knew more about what we were doing by then. I think that's the only thing. I blame it on us just knowing a little more by then. And I didn't light that.
Okay.
A friend lit that, and I have no idea what I'm doing with lights. No idea. I can write a script and kind of tell the actors where to go, but lights, no idea.
Well, it certainly looks like $300 well spent. I mean, I guess you're not costing, you know, for things like insurance, which a bigger budget would have, and the existence of the cars.
I think the insurance for 11 days was going to be $1,800,
which
is more than
$300.
Yeah.
Cool. Does anyone in the audience have any questions for the director?
How long did that actually take to film it?
We shot it over weekends, and I would say that it was maybe 6 weekends, so 12 days, and then obviously we have like little pickups here and there, but definitely under like 16 days.
Cool.
Yes?
You said that your friend played the lead.
Yes.
Did he have acting experience before?
No, because I've made so many shorts. He's just kind of my go-to guy. So that's his experience, but just running around with me with a camera.
Slightly different question if you've answered the first one. There was no county or state involved by Ohio in any of this, because it was all filmed in Clarksville, Ohio, is that right?
It's called Martins Ferry, Ohio is where it was filmed.
Yeah,
but I'm not sure I understand your question.
What?
Anyway,
No.
We just kind of ran the traffic. Gosh.
One thing that I was curious about was, I don't know if it was intentional or not, but seeing your lead actor half naked quite often, being shot, being, you know, electrocuted, it had the kind of Christian martyr image almost. I was thinking of like, you know, paintings of Saint Sebastian.
Definitely wasn't intentional, but that's the image that sort of sparked the whole idea for the movie. I just moved into this new house, and that bathtub was sort of sitting out in the garden, and like trees and stuff were growing out of it. And I was like, that thing looks like it should be in a movie. And now we're talking about it. But not intentional at all. But I definitely see what you're saying. That's neat. Nobody's ever brought that up somehow. But yeah, that's interesting.
Any other?
I noticed the end credits, there was still quite a lot of people involved in the project, and I was just wondering, you know, from the start of the process to the end of the process, how you got people to share your vision and also to be involved in a project where, you know, doing it maybe as a favour to you, or when they're not actually going to get paid for it, or...
The trick to getting people to come help is that, like, we just didn't get people to come help. Nine times out of ten, it was me and the actors. We even built a helmet with the microphone in it, like, so that I could do both. We just tried to avoid as many people as we could, because they won't show up, and now you're like, well, where's this mic gonna go?
Yeah.
So, but what you were seeing in the credits would be things like we needed to use that veterinary hospital. So we have like the doctor and all the nurses that came and closed down the hospital for a day for us, and people like that. Like my mom's probably in there 3 times for letting us use her house, her salon, the building that they break into at the beginning, the house that they buy, like things like that. It's just it's mainly all of the people who just said yes when we asked them, can we use this? I wouldn't say I composed. I'd mix some stuff together, but I didn't really do too much writing of music. Yeah.
Anyone else?
On the promotional side of things, I think I read this morning that you did something where you gave a movie away for free for a weekend. Was that correct?
Yeah, November 11th, I put it online for free for 2 days, and sent out a whole bunch of press releases in the weeks leading up to it. And somehow between November 11th and I think 13th, we got 22,000 hits.
Wow.
And we have no idea where they came from. So, yeah.
What kind of feedback have you had so far?
People seem to be really responding well to it. I mean, when you shoot a movie with $300 and, like, you know, you have no marketing budget, no, like, we had to have a fundraiser to get me here this week. We just had it last week, but it pleasantly surprises people that when you say it was $300, they think that they're going to watch, like, something worse, I guess. It's better than they think.
Anyone else?
When did the original idea come, and how long did it take to make it fully fleshed into a script?
He was in Afghanistan in 2009, and then, I think it took a... I would have gotten the idea like in May of 2010, maybe. And then by September, we had a script. By September, we were casting it. And then we casted it and couldn't afford any of the actors we casted and had to tell them no. And then we shut down production, basically. Well, we tried to fundraise from September through April. And didn't work, so then we just shot it in like April and May, like over 6-8 weeks there. Yeah, from like, I guess, conception to today was like 2 years.
Wow.
But there's also a year of failed fundraising in there, so it's like a year, I guess.
Well, I think the thing is with this festival, you have a lot of people who are very interested about filmmaking. Get loads of people making short films that they send to us.
Mm-hmm.
And I think to see, you know, a great film made for $300 is a real kind of encouragement to people who are thinking about making films. Basically, just do it. I think
yeah.
That's your advice.
Yeah. That would be my advice to anyone. I mean, yeah, because if we didn't just do it, you guys would have never seen that.
Yeah.
I'd have never been to London. Just do it. I just hear, even kids that I've... that I went to film school with, they're still not making movies. They're always talking about, oh yeah, we might have funding in place and so and so is gonna come in and do this for us. I'm like, dude, just make the movie. Quit talking to me. Like, yeah, make it. Make the movie. Yeah, I mean, my advice, make the movie.
On that note, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Memory Lane will be released in the UK later this year, and to find out more, please go to their website, 553am.com. Next, here's my interview with the co-director of the Blair Witch Project, Eduardo Sanchez, talking about his new film, Lovely Molly. It's your fourth collaboration with writer Jamie Nash, and they've been four very different films. This is a psychological horror film that uses elements of haunted houses. The previous one was about strange cannibalistic albino creatures in China.
Yeah.
The one before that was kind of a take on reality horror shows. How do the two of you come up with your ideas in order for each film to be fresh, you know, and different to the previous one?
We just have, I don't know, it's a weird combination. It's like the, sometimes he comes up with it, sometimes I come up with it. He most of the time does most of the work, you know, because he's a real writer. He's like a kind of guy who, like, in 5 days, like, has a draft for you, and it's good. 50% of it will be in the final draft, you know, good. I take 9 months to write a script, you know. It's just like pulling teeth. But with Lovely Molly, so basically, you know, Altered was completely his. Seventh Moon was my idea that we collaborated on. And then Lovely Molly was his idea. That I completely ran off and did almost on my own.
Okay.
And he, and the thing about Jamie is that he's cool enough to let me do it.
Mm.
You know, he knows that I respect him, and you know, I always work with him, and you know, he wrote Exist for us, the Bigfoot script that we just finished, film that we just finished a month and a half ago, and he knows that, you know, he trusts me and I trust him, so I just took the idea and he let me run with it,
mm.
and he kind of just stayed out of my way, and I, you know, I'd go back to him periodically, but it's the first time that's happened in our, you know, in our collaboration. Most of the time, we come up with an outline together. If somebody comes up with an idea, we come up with an outline, and then he does the writing because, you know, he's a real writer.
Mm.
But for some reason, this one, the original title was called The Possession, and it really did possess me. Like, I had this idea in my head of this rhythm and this flow, and it took me a while to get into it. And then, and really the challenge was that it was a totally found footage movie. The idea was a woman, you know, or man, because I don't know if he said who it was, but somebody videotapes himself going through what they think is a demonic possession.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's a great premise, but I didn't want to make a found footage movie. You know, this was, you know, I had, Rec had already been out and Cloverfield had been out, but Paranormal Activity.
Mm. Well, and inevitably, it says on the poster, from the director of the Blair Witch Project, and so yes. You don't want to be seen to be going over all ground.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, and you know, and I never, and honestly, I never thought I would make another, you know, first a found footage movie, and mm. actually the Bigfoot movie that I just did is a found footage, completely found footage movie, but it's, it was just fun, and it was just perfect for what it was. I honestly never thought that the, you know, I always thought that the found footage was a gimmick.
Mm.
That's why we didn't do anything after Blair Witch. You know, it was like, we had 10 ideas for, we were like, oh, you could do this, and you could go into space, and you could do like, you know, like, you know, Bonnie and Clyde, you could do, you know, haunted house. I mean, we went through everything, you know, but we were, at the end, we didn't even think about it for even 5 minutes. We were like, all right, you know, what are we doing now, you know?
Although, in a way, you do kind of a homage to Blair Witch with your opening shot of a damsel in distress in front of a video camera.
Absolutely,
you know.
Man. Absolutely. I mean, you know, look, and even the Exist, there's like beats, you know, where, you know, I'm like, there's my Blair Witch beat right there. because to me, Blair Witch was, and, you know, and a lot of people, and I'm not saying that, like, you know, I mean, I think, you know, I'm proud of Blair Witch, but I know that Blair Witch was, there's a lot of luck, and there's a lot of people that collaborate on it. You know, I'm partly responsible, but not fully responsible at all. I've never thought of that at all. But even other people, like an executive at Lionsgate years ago told me, he's like, you know, I went back and saw Paranormal Activity, I saw Blair Witch, and I realized how closely Paranormal Activity, beat by beat, right, follows that structure. And that structure was basically Dan and me just kind of using this footage and building a movie that we thought had kind of a conventional structure with this video camera, you know, running all over the place, you know? And it worked, you know, it was just an experiment that worked. The editing, you know, that movie, you know, obviously the actors had a great, incredible, you know, part to do with it and the story and the idea, but the editing really is when that movie came together.
Mm.
And I think that, you know, it just touched upon such, like, basic things in horror movies, basic beats, you know, hearing something in the woods, hearing a friend of yours being tortured and you can't do anything about it, you know, there's so many things, finding something, somebody was there at night and you didn't hear him or see him, you know, mysterious shit around your tent, you know, so I think that there's, I think, you know, there's probably going to be pieces of Blair Witch in all my films, you know, but, you know, like I said, man, it was just something that, you know, nobody, including us, predicted that it was going to happen, and it was such a blessing, you know, and it was a curse in other ways, but it was, you know, it wouldn't change anything for anything.
Yeah, I mean, you were talking about how there are these sort of traditional tropes of horror movies in Blair Witch, and that's something that you very much play with in Lovely Molly. It has loads of the things that you might find in a traditional haunted house movie, but as the film progresses, you realise you're watching a movie about the psychological destruction of a young woman, and the haunting may or may not be in her head.
Right. Yeah, and that's kind of was the intent, and that was like when Jamie had the idea of, you know, the possession thing, and I've been wanting to make an Exorcist movie since I was a kid, you know, like since I saw Exorcist, it freaked me out, and I was always afraid because I was always like, man, this is dark. And, you know, I was raised Catholic, and even though in my, you know, later years I've lost pretty much all my faith, you know, there's still something scary about dealing with, like, that directly with something that, you know, I once believed in.
Mm.
You know, if there's Jesus, there's Satan, you know?
Mm.
So, and also after Blair Witch, I didn't really personally go through it, but there was definitely, like, the reason why we didn't do any more horror movies for a long time was that Dan and I were both, we had been in such a dark place for so many years, you know, like, you know, coming up with backstory and kids being murdered and, you know, people being disemboweled and just the darkest, you know? And it was, like, really draining, you know? It was really draining. And other people in the circle around Blair Witch, some weird things happened even more directly that kind of pointed toward something dark, you know, that was around us. But so with, what was the original question?
Just how with Lovely Mother you actually subvert some of the notions of a haunted house movie.
Yeah, so for me it was mostly about, like, taking that and just playing with it in a way that, you know, you wouldn't expect to play with it. Like, you know, there was going to be an exorcist scene. There was going to be an exorcist woman. There's just going to be this ex-nun that came in as the exorcist at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
And did some, you know, I was never going to do the holy water thing, but I was going to do something where it's like this woman, no wonder she got kicked out of the, you know, she was excommunicated from the Catholic Church because of her, you know, she was a nun that was outspoken and, you know, so she comes in and does these things, and the whole exorcism scene was going to be this really ridiculous, crazy thing that she was going to do to Molly, but it somehow worked. And I got to page 90 in the movie, and I was like, well, the exorcism didn't happen. So for a while, I called it, it's an exorcist movie without the exorcism. And I was also interested in the idea that, like, what do you do if you don't know an exorcist?
Yeah.
And what do you do if you don't have, you know, health insurance, which is something that, you know, in the United States, people deal with every day, and it's a debate that happens every day about the idea that, like, you know, should government provide some basics, you know, of health care for people? And you know, what do you do when you don't? I mean, you know, a psychiatrist is really expensive. You know, real psychiatric help is really expensive, and, you know, you can't, you know, what are you going to do if you can't afford it? So basically everybody around Molly is completely ill-equipped to deal with her, whether it's possession or psychosis or drug use or whatever. I mean, her sister gives her a joint, knowing that she had been through that as a teenager. And she knows when she's doing it that she's doing something wrong. She tries to take the joint away from her, you know what I mean? So there's all these triggering mechanisms, you know? And to me, that's kind of what, you know, I wanted to kind of put all these things in a blender and kind of just play with it. And in the end, make a really, you know, try to make as scary a movie as I could. And also make a movie that, like, didn't tie things up and that left you with questions and left you uncomfortable and left you with, like, what did I just see? You know, there's few movies, like when I first saw Texas Chainsaw Massacre. It was just something like I had seen something wrong, or when I finally saw Cannibal Holocaust. I don't know if you've seen Cannibal Holocaust,
no,
but like it was a movie that was it was banned in the U.S. It's probably banned here, but
it was for a while.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, basically they kill animals on, you know, it's not right. And I can swear that they use cadavers. You know, I don't know. Nobody's brought that up, but I think they use cadavers in that movie. Anyway, so when I finally saw it, it was after Blair Witch, you know, I turned it off after about an hour, and I was like, I don't want to see this anymore. And my thing was, like, I wanted Lovely Molly to kind of touch on that, not on anything where it's like, man, they're really killing animals on screen, they're doing something wrong, but I wanted to make it where a movie where, like, it kind of moved you to, you know, experience a true horror, which is, you know, the just the senseless killing of a child and of a man, of two men, and just, and how this girl, why she did it, and not know why she did it. Like, well, it's a demon. Well, no, it's not a demon. It's because she's doing, you know, heroin. No, it's not because of that. It's because she's crazy. You know, that's what I wanted to do. You know, where it's like where really it's the case in real life. You know?
Yeah.
You have these murders, and every time you try to come up with some kind of reason. Oh, she killed her kids because of the insurance, or he killed his wife and his family because his wife was having an affair or whatever. But it's like, yeah, but really, that's the reason? something else was going on and you can't even imagine, and that's really what is scary, you know?
Well, as long as you've hooked the audience with the characterization and the script and so on, it doesn't matter if you leave it ambiguous, because they'll fill in the gaps themselves.
Yeah, and to me, that's like, you know, that's the genius of, you know, what like Robert Wise did with The Haunting and with the original Haunting, and what Hitchcock always used to do is the idea of, like, you know, you hear something, or you see evidence of something, or you, you know, you catch a glimpse of something, and then the audience is like, what was that? It looked like, you know, like that demon at the end of the movie. It's like barely perceptible in the light.
Yeah.
And people have said, it looks like, is it a horse, or is it a deer, or it looks like a tree? I'm like, it doesn't, I don't want people to know what the hell it is. It just looks like a thing out in the woods and appears to her, right?
Yeah.
So there's this level of, like, you know, giving the audience enough of what they want, but not giving them all what they want, because then to me, it's not that kind of movie. Other movies are fine, you know, like my Bigfoot movie, it's a different, completely different kind of movie, you know, but this one, to me, it was, you know, I wanted the people to feel, you know, uncomfortable coming out of the theater, and I wanted it to haunt them for whatever reason that they was doing, you know.
And I heard one of the big influences on this film was Polanski's Repulsion. And it occurred to me that as you're originally a Cuban, you've obviously still got somewhat an outsider's viewpoint coming to American culture.
Yeah.
And I guess that's kind of what Polanski was bringing to that film, his first English language film. And it's something that you've also done in previous films like Seventh Moon, which is like the outsider encountering Chinese culture.
Like the, you know, the dumb white man, you know.
Yeah.
And to me, like, and I, you know, obviously I consider myself an American and I'm proud to be American, but there's always a disconnect, you know, when, you know, certain things like crazy patriotism and this, you know, this thing that I mean, it's all over the world, but in America there's just this, I don't know, it's just weird. I mean, because I'm proud to be an American, but at the same time it's like there's certain things that, you know, my family is what, you know, I mean, there's, you know, it's like my country's my country, but, you know, it's just a weird thing. Like, I don't, you know, there's just, like, you know, you were saying, it's like, there's just certain things that I don't connect with, you know, in the same way. But, you know, the thing about Repulsion was that I had never heard of the movie, and, you know, and I wrote the movie, and we were actually, like, 2 weeks away from starting the movie to shoot Molly, and I was just going through Netflix, and basically either streaming or ordering on DVD every movie for about two or three months I did this. Every movie that had anything to do with any kind of weird storyline based on, you know, Molly, you know, people being possessed or, you know, haunted houses. I was just going through everything. And I was like, wow, this is a Polanski movie I had never seen before. I had heard about it, but I'd never seen it. And I saw it in literally 2 weeks, and I was like, wow, that is crazy that there were so many elements that they shared, you know. It was just kind of like, and I really appreciate it, you know what I mean. And the thing that I got from Repulsion was that it didn't work for me 100%, but that's what I liked about it. It left me uncomfortable, you know. And to me, like, I think that that's, you know, what I took mostly from that movie was that, you know, it's okay to, you know, it's okay to be a little ambiguous, and it's okay to leave things open-ended as long as, you know, we care for the characters and there's, you know, and there's a cohesive kind of, you know, through line. You know, it's just one of those things, man. It's just like I've told people, like, if I had seen Cannibal Holocaust, I think if Dan and I, either of us, had seen Cannibal Holocaust, we would have never made Blair Witch.
Sure.
I mean, we would have been like, well, it's already been done. Why are we going to do it again?
You know
what I mean? So, you know, I guess ignorance is bliss at certain, you know, certain levels. So.
Cool. Thank you very much.
Cool, man. Thanks a lot.
Cheers.
Lovely Molly is released in cinemas on the 29th of June, and you can find out more information about the film at www.lovelymolly.com. Eduardo Sanchez's first film, The Blair Witch Project, is available on DVD in the UK, and his other movies, Altered and Seventh Moon, are available on American DVD and can be imported by websites such as Amazon.com. The Electric Sheep Magazine podcast was recorded, edited, and introduced by Alex Fitch, and you can find all previous episodes at electricsheepmagazine.co.uk/events. Thanks for listening.